are you?
Good morning.
Nice to have you back for the court.
Thank you.
Do you want to reserve a portion of your
time? 3 minutes, please, Your Honor.
You have it, and you may proceed when you're ready.
Thank you. Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is David Hargett. Represent Mr. Kovac for on appeal of his convictions out of Westmoreland County. There are really, it's a fairly straightforward case in the sense that it's an insufficiency of the evidence argument as to all the charges. But of course, we kind of need to look at the charges individually to determine whether or not the evidence is sufficient. As far, and I'll start with the possession charges. And I will note that the Attorney General's office has essentially conceded that the unallocated space, the charges that...
If I could interrupt you, Ms. Bourne, is that accurate, the unallocated space? That will help us to sort of...
Yes, Your Honor. Under that Todman case, I think we have enforced the unallocated
right.
space.
That'll help you to sort of get into the other things that might be more problematic. When
yes, Your Honor.
Whoever concedes, that makes it easier for you, but the things they don't concede make it more difficult.
Yes, Your Honor, and they did so in the brief as well. I would also say when it comes, so I will move on to the thumb catch because I think that that is extremely comparable to the unallocated space.
Well, different from the unallocated space, and I appreciated the arguments that were made in this case and information that both sides provided us to help us understand how these computer things work. And it seems that there's a distinct difference between the unallocated space and space that could be deemed as allocated. And the distinction is that the unallocated space takes special maneuvers, special process, whatever, to get to it, as opposed to the information that the Commonwealth relies on for the prosecution of these particular charges, where there are certain identifiers, like the name Mikey, the references that were made, some statements that your client made with regard to this particular information, and certain other circumstantial evidence to point to a conclusion that this indeed was something that was used and accessed by your client. How do you get around that argument, particularly when we're talking about a sufficiency case?
Well, a lot of those other things have to do with the other charges, not the thumbnail catch. The thumb catch is essentially, it saves a thumbnail image of whatever the document was or the file was. That, and there's testimony from the Commonwealth on this, and I believe it's page 105 of the appendix, Your Honor, where the officer testifies that these are hidden files. So it is saved, and this is different than the other cases, which is the recycle bin, which essentially you just go to and click restore, and boom, it's there. And then there's the temporary internet catch. Now that is essentially the same thing. It saves the image temporarily in a file. All you have to do is go to it, click on it, boom, it's back. The thumb catch is different. It's a hidden file. You have to go to it and access it, know how to access it,
But it is accessible.
Well, yes and no. It depends on what you mean by accessible. It's not viewable. That's really the issue, isn't it? I mean, if we're talking about these type of charges, is it viewable? And if you look at page 105 of the appendix, he says that you can't see it. It's there. You can go to hidden files, but you can't see it. You have to have software, special software, to access it. And you also have to have some knowledge as to what you were doing. And so that is very much like the unallocated space. It might be a different program, as it might not be as expensive as the one to access the unallocated space, but you have to have it. And the officer's testimony,
you have to have that program.
You have to have the program.
So in order to even know it's on your computer.
In order to
see it.
It's a hidden file, yes, Your Honor. As far as how can you know what it is if you can't see it? So, I mean, I think that these things just have these long tags of different letters and numbers. So you can look and see that there is something there, if that's what you mean by seeing it. But you can't see what it is. So you can't knowingly possess something if you don't know what it is essentially the argument.
You looked at your computer screen, and the right things pulled out. You can see that something is there, you just don't know what it is. Am I understanding you correctly?
You know, I'm not a computer expert, but from what the testimony seems to suggest is that it is a hidden file, meaning that you have to know how to get into your hidden files. once you get into a hidden file, you can see that there are files there. I mean, we can all do that. We can look at a screen and see there's a folder and there are all these tags to it, whatever it is. But if you click on it, you can't access it. Or if you can access it, you can't even see what it is because you have to have the special software to restore it to an image or whatever the document is.
Is your argument that the way it actually ended up on this computer, or at least a reasonable hypothesis of innocence of how it ended up on his computer, is that through the Shariaza program somehow it got on there, but he didn't know it?
You know, that would be speculation on my part. It certainly is a reasonable hypothesis that he had no knowing, he did not knowingly possess it.
How did he get there in the first place, though?
Right. Well, that's the same. But that's the same argument you can make with the unallocated space. I mean, at some point, what the testimony suggests is at some point there was some document or file on the computer that was then saved. When that happened, as far as the unallocated space and as far as the thumbnail catch is concerned, we don't know. We don't know when that happened.
I'm looking at the appendix, page 44 to 45, and in his conversation with the police, the appellant admitted to having file sharing or peer-to-peer software called Shariaza. In his own words, appellant installed it and used it. He was looking for adult porn, and according to him, got undesirable child porn and admitted to the zip file. He also got confused about the dates he downloaded it, etc., and that he was the dragon, in other words, and as I understand the terminology here, the dragon that stood between his children and harmful things on the internet. In other words, he had some control over what information could be received and by whom. So it at least by appellant's own statements, he was in control of this software that opened up this cache that you say that is similar to the unallocated space.
Well, I think we're kind of mixing concepts there. The stuff about the file sharing, the peer-to-peer sharing program, what he did with it, how he used it, those sorts of things might be an argument better saved for the distribution charges. But as far as the thumbnail catch possession charges is concerned, we don't know that that program had anything to do with the catch, that was then saved somehow on the computer. And it's saved because it's just essentially, if you accidentally access something and immediately delete it, it's not gone. I mean, we know that from, we've been told that for quite some time. The question is, where is it? And so it'd be different if it was just in the recycle bin. It wasn't. In this case, it's a thumbnail catch that requires special software. The evidence was that there was no special software on his computer in order to access that.
Robert, let me ask you a question. Why would someone download and have a folder and save a folder of this material if you couldn't look at it?
But Your Honor, it's not downloaded and saved. It's automatically done by the computer program.
Okay. But why would you have it there if you couldn't look at it? If it was all hidden? If you needed the special software?
Well, I guess we could ask Bill Gates that question, Your Honor, because this is a Windows program. I mean, all software does this. I mean, that's what they do. They save the stuff so you can access it later. Somebody who knows what they're doing. And that's why they have a forensic digital computer specialist in this case testifying to explain all of that. And you don't have to, this is nothing that was intentionally done. This is something that's automatically done. When it was done, we don't know. You can't access it. At the time he's charged with possession, he can't see it. He doesn't have the software to see it, and that's what the testimony was. So I don't want to waste too much time on the thumbnail catch because there are bigger issues in this case. But I think that when you look at it and say that at the time that he's indicted for possession, how could he possibly knowingly possess something he can't access, clearly can't access, and exercise dominion and control over something he doesn't know about?
What about Mike?
Well, that goes again back to the tag for the computer. I mean, his IP address, and it was labeled Mike. That was his computer. There's no doubt about that.
Thank you.
If we take a look at the closest case to this is the Cobman case. In the Cobman case, we said that items placed in the recycle bin are items that could be essentially prosecuted. I'm getting to the point. Why isn't this information that is found in this particular thumbnail that you're talking about more akin to things that are in the recycle bin because they can be accessed?
Well, that's the point. You go to your recycle bin and you click restore, boom, it's back. If it's in the thumbnail catch, number one, you don't know it's there. You can't click on it and go to it. You'd have to be able to access your hidden files. You have to have special knowledge and training to do that. There's no evidence that he had that. Furthermore, even though you can see a file is there, you don't know what it is. You essentially, if you look at page 105 of the appendix, he says you really can't see it, meaning that you don't know what it is. If we're talking about images, obviously to know what a photograph is, you have to be able to look at it. You can't have a description of it, you have to be able to look at it. In this case, there's no evidence that he had it. He had any way of knowing that it was there, and if he knew it was there, he couldn't access it without special software that we also know wasn't on his computer. That's the testimony in this case. That's the evidence in this case. That's what I'm saying. Temporary internet catch and recycle bin are completely different because they're there. All you have to do is click the button and boom, it's back. It's saved. It's there. You just have to click on it to restore it. That's it. That's not the case with the thumbnail catch. The testimony is it required special software if he didn't have it.
Can I ask you, Ms. Hargett, on the distribution charges? He has a Shariaza program that he installed on his computer. In the interviews, he seemed to know a fair amount about Shariaza. The fact, obviously, that the point of it is sharing files back and forth. Why couldn't the fact finder here conclude that he had the intent to share and therefore distribute through the Shariaza program?
Well, as far as the point being the sharing, I don't necessarily know that that was necessarily the testimony. You might be able to make that conclusion. But I would say that you can't say that he and the officer's testimony is, again, where this evidence comes from. And he says that you have to turn on the sharing in order to make it available for others, i.e. then that's where the Kelly case comes in, then it's distribution. It can be accessed at any time by anybody from anywhere once the sharing's turned on.
But
so we focus...
It's not turned on by the computer, even though you've got Shariaza, it cannot be accessed. Do I understand that right?
I'm not sure I know the answer to that specific question, but I will say this. The officer's testimony is that it can be either intentionally turned on or unintentionally turned on. And they did not know in this case whether it was intentionally turned on or not. All we know is that at some point it was on. So one, if Mr. Kovac is the one who turned it on, there's a reasonable hypothesis of innocence that it was unintentional. You can't unintentionally distribute something. And two, even if it was intentionally turned on by someone, because we have no idea when it happened, you cannot say that it was Mr. Kovac who actually turned it on.
He had his three sons who are, I guess, all minors in the high school, and he said that he very carefully monitored their access to the computer.
I mean, there was also some evidence that they did use his computer when they wanted to. And there was another individual in the home who wasn't related who was also using the computer as well. So we don't exactly know who accessed what when, but we do know that it was available. It was unintentionally, it could have been unintentionally turned on as the evidence. The sharing aspect of it could have been unintentionally turned on. And therefore, you cannot say that Mr. Kovac is guilty of the distribution because you can't say that he intentionally turned that he is the one who intentionally turned it on. You can't say it was intentionally.
If he possessed it, you're saying you can't take the next step to distribution.
Exactly. I mean, it has to possess.
Sorry, I keep asking questions. You've gone into your rebuttal.
It's fine, Your Honor. I understand. It's fine. This is very important. So, you know, the presumption of innocence and the reasonable hypothesis of innocence have to prevail here, and I will save the remainder of my time.
Good morning, Rosemary Bourne on behalf of the Appellee, the Commonwealth of Virginia. If I could just first address this possession of the thumb cache issue on page 193 of the appendix, 192 and 193. Now, it talks about the thumb cache issue, and it says specifically, in order for a file to be in the thumb cache folder, it has to be viewed within a Windows Explorer environment. This is how the thumb cache is created and populated. So the particular file would have to be viewed on that system. in order for the thumb cache to create the registry.
What page is that, Ms. Warren?
193 of the joint appendix. And so the issue here, I think we're sort of mixing apples and oranges. There's a date in the indictment, which he is indicted for having possessed this. And that, of course, was the date the stuff was recovered. So he says, well, I didn't possess it on that date because although maybe I had it at one point, at that point I didn't have it anymore. And, of course, the question here is, did he know what it was? And did he currently possess it? And he did know what it was because on page 193 of the appendix and the circumstances, the other circumstances in this case, including the volume of child porn that was all over this house in a variety of different computers and SD cards and everything else, I guess negates the reasonable hypothesis that somehow he accidentally downloaded some child porn in this case. He knew what it was because it had to be viewed.
If we take that step, assuming for the sake of argument that there is material on the computer that is objectionable or illegal or whatever, does that necessarily infer that what the Commonwealth is prosecuting him for in this context was also his?
I wouldn't say it. I would say that that's one factor of many factors that the trial court could have relied upon to determine that the evidence was sufficient. So in this case, someone had to view it. Now, he himself gave a statement to police that he was the dragon. He didn't think his children were interested in gay porn, either of the adult or the child variety, and that nobody else in his, he didn't think they were looking at this stuff on his computer. Another witness testified that they were interested in girls, not in young boys. Yes, yes.
What about the other person in the house? Well,
he testified, and the trial court was in a position to determine whether he was credible or not. And the trial court determined that he was. So, he denied having downloaded this stuff. And so the trial court was certainly in a position to say, no, I think it's Mr. Kovach.
But as I understand your opponent colleague's argument, and this computer stuff is difficult for us all unless we have forensic education on this stuff, is that just because something shows up on your computer, such as the unallocated space that you can't really get to, doesn't necessarily mean that the person has accessed it.
Well, I would disagree. I think that the problem here is, and what happened in Cobman, and why we agreed and conceded in that.
Case.
Yes. No. Well, but talking about an allocated space, yeah, and why we conceded on the unallocated space, is because if you think it's not a question of originally having it, it's a question of whether you believe you've actually deleted it on the date of the indictment, and whether that is a believable circumstance. Whether it's still there, not whether it ever was there. And so here we have testimony that it was there, that it had to be viewed, and that it was still there. This is kind of like I've thought about how can we talk about this in the context of a non-computer environment, because sometimes the computer stuff gets so confusing it's really hard to understand. If, for example, I was able to have child porn in invisible ink, and I buried it in my house under the floor, but I couldn't look at it unless I wiped something special across it, I would still have it. I would still possess it if I had once looked at it. And that is the same as what it is here. All you have to do to look at this again, we know he viewed it at one point, is to get this software. He still has it. It's still on his computer. And at one point, there's evidence from which the trial
court... would presuppose that you had the invisible link. And in this case, there is no evidence that he had the invisible link that would be necessary to open up this particular thing.
But you don't have to know that you can view it again. You just have to know that you possess it, which is what, I mean, the viewing in and of itself isn't the same as the possessing, correct? So if you know that you have it and you know what it is, then you have it. And that's the same reason why we have it in the recycle bin, because you might not be able to look at it right at that moment, but there's no evidence, which comparable to the unallocated space, that you've actually gotten rid of it and you think you've divested yourself of this pornographic material. And so that is why I would argue. Now, We, on the one hand, it's a continuum. We have the unallocated space on one end of the continuum, and we have the recycle bin on the other end of the continuum. And clearly, this thumb cache is somewhere in the middle. But the trial court here made the determination that he knowingly possessed it. And part
of the date of the indictment.
On the date of the indictment. And the evidence that, and there was testimony, unlike the unallocated space, and I think part of what Cobman discussed in some of the other cases, and I think I gave some out-of-state cases that talk about similar issues, is that you have to have forensic software that isn't available easily to get the unallocated space.
I'd like to try to come up with examples as to how something could happen that something explainable. For instance, obviously I have my computer here on my desk, and my law clerks this morning plugged me in to make sure that I was ready to go. And there's this case that's on my computer that's talking about child pornography and the like. And they turn it on, and for whatever reason, my computer, because child pornography has been mentioned on my computer, takes me to some place that I don't know about, and it's there. And I don't know that it's there because I don't have the software to get to it, and I'm not concerned with it being there. But someone who has forensic expertise could come on and say, hey, Alston's computer has child porn on it, and I might not even know it.
But you know what the difference in that is? And I think we've all made the mistake of, you know, once or twice getting on something where I've typed something and I'm like, whoa, I didn't mean to go there, and, you know, that happens. Luckily, nothing like this, but well, I'm sure we've all had these moments, and but nonetheless.
Okay.
Nonetheless, and you know, of course, it's even more worrisome when you have kids like I do. But the issue here is that there was testimony that it had been viewed on that computer. That had been viewed and on page 193. There was testimony that it had been viewed, not just in the thumb cache, but also on the Shariaza.
Suppose it's been viewed, and he goes, oh my gosh, this was just clicked on, delete, and then you think it's gone, but it's not. And this thumbnail cache, you can't really determine whether it's gone or not, right? Without buying a special program and having some expertise.
All you have to do is download it from the internet. It's a free program. It's a free program. That was the testimony. But I think we can't discount, and I don't want to completely get stuck on this thumb cache, because really this is pretty small potatoes.
Before you transition, was that free program on his computer?
There was no testimony about that. But before I get off on talking about the distribution, I would just say that the other circumstances, including his statements, which were, the trial court said he was something like a victim of his own words or something like that. I think those was the phrase. Or he was caught up in some of his own words. I may not be quoting him exactly. And the fact that he had all this, I mean, if the only circumstance was the quantity of porn, then we would maybe say that that's not enough. But it's not the only circumstance. But there was a quantity of porn, and it was in his house in a place that he had control over.
Not just on the computer.
In SD drive, in the laundry basket, all over his house. He admits that he's interested in twinks, which I did not know what that was until I actually read this appendix, but he's interested in young men and admits that he at one point had some kind of child porn on his, or saw some 12 or 13 year old boys on the computer. So it's under a screen name Mike. He admits that he's using Shariaza. All of these circumstances taken together go toward what his intent and knowledge was in this particular case. And so I would argue that the evidence was sufficient on the thumb cache. Now, with regard to the distribution, there was testimony that he used Shariaza. He knew what it was. Now, he said he was only using it for other things, but the trial court wasn't required to believe that, and apparently did not. And there was testimony that it was distributed, coming out in little batches on different dates. You know, a little bit was released on this time when he was the only one awake and in the house, or some of those times the other people were excluded from being in the house. And it's dribbling out, and the whole purpose, we know from reading the Kelly case, of these peer-to-peer sharing softwares is so that you can share software with other like-minded individuals, which is apparently what was going on here. So because of that, because he acknowledged that he was using it for porn, although he said it was only people over 18, but the trial court was entitled to disbelieve that based on all of the circumstances in this case. And because of all of those things, I would argue the evidence was sufficient on the distribution. Unless the court has further questions.
Is your position then that if you have Shariazid, if you have to, I guess, purchase that program.
Right.
If you had that is not enough to prove this, but is a significant factor.
Well, it's not just that he bought it, but he acknowledged he was using it for porn. I mean, it's not just that he bought it. He's using it for that. He's the only one in the house when this stuff is being distributed from his computer, which is using his IP address, his mic. He's the only adult in the house. The other people, through the testimony, could have been reasonably excluded. And there's a volume of child porn all over his house.
Well, and the purpose of the program is to share.
The purpose of the program is to share. That is the purpose of a peer-to-peer program. And you can disable that, which the police did, because they didn't want to be in the business of sharing child porn. But he did not disable that and did not do it on multiple occasions.
Mr. Hartnett noted that you can turn it on or off.
That's correct.
If it is turned off, can it share... Can other people still access things from his computer simply
no.
because he has Shariazid?
No, they cannot. I mean, that's my reading of the testimony. Unless the court has further questions for me, I would just ask that you affirm.
Thank you, Ms.
Thank
Warren.
You.
Mr. Hargett,
you'll
be your rebuttal.
Thank you,
Your Honor. Mr. Hargett, the purpose of the program is to share porn, is it not?
No, the purpose, I don't necessarily know that that's the purpose. There's certainly a sharing program, but there are tons of those programs, and people use it for all sorts of things. Music, there are many programs out there, Your Honor. I don't know what the evolution of this particular program is, but I know...
Well, it's a program for sharing chicken recipes, is it?
It could be, sure.
Okay, thank you.
And so to say that the defendant knew what it was just because it's in a hidden file, I think, is a specious argument. You can't say just because it was accessed at some point and now it's saved on the computer in a form that's hidden that can't be accessed without special software, you can't say that he knowingly possessed it and that he had dominion and control over it. As a matter of fact, if you look at it, the same argument can be made about the unallocated space. At some point, something was accessed on the computer that saved something in the unallocated space. That's exactly the same thing about the thumbnail catch. The file is gone. The file, whatever it was that created that thumbnail, is gone. And you can't restore it without software. The evidence was not that there was no evidence.
Time has expired. I want you to answer one quick question.
Yes, Sean.
It seems to me that this case turns on how far this court and other courts are going to interpret Kopman. In other words, Kopman is the unallocated space case, saying that you can't make those kinds of cases where it cannot be reasonably accessed. The Commonwealth is suggesting in this case that there's circumstantial evidence to get us out of the concerns raised in Kopman. All of the things that we've talked about before, we don't need to rehash those things. Why do you think this case is more like Kopman and not like what the Commonwealth suggests from a circumstantial standpoint? And your quick Reader's Digest response.
It's a hidden file that you can't access without special software and knowledge. That's the testimony. He had neither. Mr. Kovac had neither the specialized knowledge. There's no evidence of it. And he didn't have the program needed to access it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.